Oh, celebrity phone blinking again. They love doing this to me. Let's go to it right now. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, it's me, Jan Arden from Calgary, Alberta.
Oh, hey, Jan, how are you?
Oh my gosh, it's so great to be here in Winnipeg.
Oh, that's right. You're doing two shows in Winnipeg, right?
Yes, I am. Where are you?
Okay, here we go. This is awkward, everybody. So I'm usually in Winnipeg, and right now we're in Houston taping our Christmas show, so I'm getting a little bit of warmth. But there's a bit of snow there in Winnipeg, so this is what happened, Jen. I'm backpedaling now. But you have two sold-out concerts that I couldn't get tickets to, so I just figured I'm going to Houston.
I know somebody. I could have got you in.
Uh-oh, she foiled my plan. Oh, no. Well, all right. Okay. Lucky Texas. Let's see if maybe, because you're in Toronto coming up as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe if you're putting the invitation out there, Jan, I'll see what I can do about Toronto, okay?
You know, drink, we can share some shortbread.
Well, I know you're an animal lover. I could have left my dogs at the house. You could have just stayed at the house with the Golden Retriever and the Lab Cross.
Sure.
Okay, you have to bring something that's fur-proof, though. They tend to shed and slobber a little bit, too. Well, yeah, thanks for calling in. I know you're going to have a great time in Winnipeg. Two shows are happening.
I had my tree up a week ago just so that I didn't have to deal with it when I got home. But, yeah, it's super exciting. I have to tell you, the opportunity to sing with a symphony is something that doesn't happen very often. And it's a very surreal experience.
It seems almost much more pure than having, you know, a big, like, rock band behind you. Not that you have, you know, heavy rock songs, but it's just, and it seems more intimate, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, oddly, you know, you see 40 musicians on stage, and it's amazing how you see everyone working together for, you know, this common goal, which is to, you know, piece this song together. It always amazes me that the composers write all these different parts for these instruments and that it just fits together like a puzzle. And when you're standing there on the stage, the whole, it hums, like it really moves under your feet. There's a vibration, a very palpable physical vibration. And it's something that it really stays with you. Obviously, you can't travel with a symphony all the time or you'd be completely broke. But, you know, having this opportunity to do this is really indelible.
And so the tour, and then also I guess your LP is called A Jan Arden Christmas, and so you're performing the classics, right?
Yes. Everyone that's familiar with my Christmas record, I mean, even you don't even have to have the record. You'll know every single one of these songs. Some of them are secular, some of them are non-secular, but they are traditional Christmas songs and seasonal songs, holiday songs. But they're very familiar. I worked with the producer, Bob Rock, who, you know, some people are familiar with, but he's done so much with so many different artists. And he really went out of his way to make sure that we just did a really traditional record that really felt like you've been listening to it for 25 years. And that's what I love about this record. I mean, I like contemporary Christmas music. I like the stuff that's got a modern spin on it, and, you know, you really rework the songs that you've heard for, you know, 50, 60 years. But we really stuck to tradition on this record, and I love it. And I think people have been, you know, really, really happy about that.
Do you like when people sort of kick up the energy on Christmas tunes and, you know, like do dance mixes and things like that? Or do you prefer the traditional like you're talking about?
I like a little bit of both. I mean, I love hearing new spins on Christmas rap music. I'm sure a lot of people have been raving about this already, but the Pentatonics,
yeah,
you know, do all this sort of a cappella stuff. You know, they kind of harken back to Manhattan Transfer. I'm really dating myself, but if you can remember what Manhattan Transfer used to do, and the Swingle Singers, you know, these people, these vocal groups that just did these arrangements that didn't have any instrumentation. It was all done vocally. So it's pretty mind-boggling what they do just with the human voice. But I like all of it. I'm still such a huge fan of Boney M. That's one of the records that I put on year after year after year. You know, those great kind of 70s, 80s disco-themed Christmas music. I mean, who would have thought that it would have been so popular all these years later?
Jeremy Bradley here again, live from Houston, Texas, with Jan Arden, who's live in Winnipeg. She's in my hometown while I'm not. And we're talking everything Christmas. Now, I have to know, you're getting ready for Christmas, like either you're setting up the tree or you're wrapping presents. What music is playing? What movie is on? What are you drinking? What are you eating? What's happening?
What aren't I eating? I have to say this, and don't judge me, but I have a Christmas playlist that I've been compiling for years, and I have almost 1,600 songs on my Christmas playlist, and yes, there's tons of repeats, but they're all from different artists. I mean, I might hear Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire by 20 different artists in the course of a 4 or 5 hour evening. You know, Doris Day, Sinatra, Sarah McLachlan, Andrea Bocelli, and Michael Bublé all singing the same song. But I keep adding to it. Like last year, I added a couple of Streisand records. I added Annie Lennox. I added a Sting Christmas album that's really not traditional at all. He does all these really interesting Celtic folk Christmas songs. So, you know, I love listening to that every year. I usually get through all the songs. Like, it takes me a week to get through the entire playlist, but I'm always mind-blown by that. But, you know, I love the eggnog. I just bought, today, I actually bought some soy eggnog, and it's pretty damn good.
Wow.
But, you know, shortbread cookies are a big hit around, you know, my place. And mincemeat tarts, some people like them, some people hate them. But, yeah, I mean, how much chocolate and how much shortbread can you eat, really?
Well, quite a bit. Now, do you have, like, I know I love shortbreads, but I always find that there's certain family members, like, nobody can make them like my mom does. And then when it comes to, when it comes to mashed potatoes and gravy, my grandma does that the best. Like, does anybody stick out for you?
Well, my dad, he's no longer with us. He passed away a year and a half ago, but he made the best shortbread. So him and your mom would have been great pals. But he also made this stuffing that was his mother's stuffing. And I remember when she used to make it when she was alive, his mother. And, but I know how to make dad's stuffing now, and it's so simple with onions and bread and sage and butter and cream, and it's just one of those things where you just never think it's going to taste good, and year after year people are like, oh, I miss the stuffing so much, so I would have to say the stuffing is something that has now been passed on to me, which I love to make.
You know, coming up next year, you're being inducted into the Canadian Music Hall of Fame.
My name got thrown into that list, but I'm very flattered and, you know, really blown away. And I mean, I feel like I've got, you know, a lot left in front of me, but I really am speechless. I don't know what to say, and it's a great honor, and I guess I should start thinking about a speech of some kind.
Well, let's talk about that. So you've had quite a successful, you know, few decades in the music business, and we always see these people, aspiring singers or musicians on YouTube and social media, they're trying to be seen, they're trying to, you know, either become famous or rich or whatever it is. What advice would you give somebody who really genuinely has an interest in singing or writing music? What would you tell them to try to make it in the music biz?
Gosh, you know, I think if you just really concentrate on your work, and concentrate on your craft, and try and sing wherever you can, you know, open mic nights and bars and clubs, and put ads in newspapers, and find like-minded people, and just play, you know, just play your instrument, whether it's guitar or piano, write music, you know, even if you don't particularly fancy yourself a songwriter, I think it's an important part of the equation. I think persistence is much bigger than talent. I think we see it all the time in, you know, pop music. Now you'll hear people that, you know, don't sound like they're particularly that good, but one thing, they have this intrepid spirit, and people that want to get to where they're going, they just don't take no for an answer. So persistence sometimes outweighs everything. So I always tell people not to give up. The more you do something, the better you get at it. And if people are telling you no, that often means you're kind of on the right track. You know, to be different and to stand apart from other people sometimes is really painful. And sometimes you take a lot of grief. But, you know, it's worth it in the end to truly be an original. Sometimes you just have to, you know, tuck your shoulders in and put your head down and walk into the wind. So that's what makes art exciting. You know, that's what makes having a creative life so purposeful, is that you're making something out of nothing. And that's pretty exciting.
Let's flip it around. What would you tell them to absolutely never, ever, ever, ever do?
Step on somebody else. You know, to admonish other people or wish that other people don't do well. I think altruism is something that's so important in a creative life. You know, to cheer other people on, it only enhances your own work. It really does. There's room for everybody. You know, just because somebody else is a singer-songwriter and you feel like they're encroaching on your territory, there's room for everybody. I see that a lot. You know, I'm not huge on competitions, you know, vocal competitions and writing competitions. To me, art is so subjective. They all win by just trying out for these shows. It always boggles my mind that they have the courage to go do that. I don't think I would have had the courage to take that route to get somewhere in music. But, you know, yeah, altruism. Just cheer for other people.
When you first started out, though, was there anything that surprised you about the music business that you just didn't see coming or didn't even know would exist?
Gosh, I think there was a lot of things. You know, when Insensitive really started hitting in 1994, it took us all by surprise. It was this song that a friend of mine named Anne Laurie had written, and you know, we put it on the record, and you never think anything. I mean, I knew it was a strong song. I really loved the song, but when it started picking up through Texas and spreading across California and going across the states, and then it hopped overseas and was suddenly number one in Italy and a top three song in South Africa and Australia and all through, you know, the Scandinavian countries and into Asia. Like, it was bizarre. And it happened over a period of 3 or 4 months, and I was on the road for 3 years with that song all over the world. And I'll just never forget how ill-prepared we were. I laugh when I look back now how different it was. And I'm always so grateful that there was no such thing as social media, because, you know, I think it would have been tough. I don't think I would have been able to handle the criticisms and things like that. So I really do admire people, young people now that are out there, you know, having these hit songs and, you know, facing so much criticism from their peers and about their clothing and their appearance and their behavior. And, you know, gosh, it's just such a different world. But there's lots of changes happening. There's lots of things that are coming around the corner that we don't even know what music's going to look like 10 years from now.
There's a lot of opportunity to have a big break nowadays, but then also have the exact opposite and have, like you say, criticism and things blow up in your face. Do you have any advice to give on how to be no, you're kidding. You get it. See where I went there.
Well, yeah, I know. I probably do. I think anyone that wants to go into music, there's so much open territory. The internet is a really, really great tool. Obviously, you know, people are breaking into music on YouTube all the time and on these contests, and social media is making stars out of people. I think the trick here and the thing to remember is, it's quite easy to have a song now. It's not, you know, as unreachable as a person might have thought of it even up, you know, 6, 7, 10 years ago. But it's sustaining that. It's having a song. Mostly, there was some statistic that someone threw out a while ago that was, I was kind of gobsmacked by it. And they say that, you know, out of the 100% of people that are signed, within 3 years, 90% of those people are already dropped off the map. And in another 2 years, you're down to like 3% of the original sort of 100 people that would have been signed. So, you know, it really is difficult thinking long term. We're not seeing artists now, I don't think, that we're going to see 20 years from now. I think they're going to be pretty quick careers. And that's the thing I think people have to keep in mind. It is constantly working. It's constantly reinventing. It's one song, that's not your issue. The issue is carrying on after that and maintaining a career. It is just a full-time slog, and it never gets easier.
Well, we see that with a lot of forms of entertainment. TV shows, you know, canceled after, you know, three episodes, sometimes even after one. They just don't get that opportunity. If the audience isn't there right at the beginning, you know, the
absolutely. That's what I mean. It's just, you know, the one song isn't the big issue. It's doable. It really is. And social media has given us that. YouTube has given us that. But the maintaining, I mean, we're losing so many iconic singers now, and it's hard seeing these people that have been at the core of our lives, really the last 20, 30, 40 years. You look at people like the Stones, you look at people like, you know, the Eurythmics, Annie Lennox, Sting, Elton John, Billy Joel, you know, we've lost so many great people, Prince and you know, Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson and so many of these pop staples that were in our lives for 20, 30 years. And, you know, you think, you look at the sort of the geography of artists that are out there now, and you're thinking, who are our iconic artists? Who are going to be the mainstay that pick up that torch and run with it going forward? And that's troublesome to me on some level, because I don't know if we're seeing, you know, if we're seeing those kinds of strengths, you know, that people that will be here 30 years down the road, still having those powerful careers, still affecting, you know, young singer-songwriters and bands. And, you know, I don't know. I look at that. Maybe I don't want to be all doom and gloom. There's so many talented people out there. But I think the way the industry is set up, they don't think long-term. They're not thinking that way anymore. They're just thinking about the song, let's throw it against the wall, let's have it stick. And then where do you go after that? You know, do these kids get a chance at one or two more singles, or is that? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. It really will.
I see. I'm always worried that our guest is rushed, and if you want to keep talking, we can do it. We've got a few more minutes left. But social media, you chime in quite a bit on President Trump. I've seen it. I'm scared to ask, though, can you sum up your thoughts in a censored way?
Well, I think it's been very alarming. You know, I'm glad that the American people, the majority of them, the popular vote, went to Miss Clinton. You know, it shows me that, you know, most of what America wanted is not how the Electoral College works. And most of the friends that I speak to, whether they're 20 or 50, the big question always comes up about the Electoral College and why does it work that way and why do they do it? You know, that doesn't really make it fair. And I'm like, well, it's supposed to make it fair. But I think as far as him as a person, he's shown us who he is. He's shown us his character. It's sad that it's happened, but having said that, I deep down, I don't want him to fail. I don't want him to start a war. I don't want him to have to push a red button. I don't want him to ruin, you know, the work that the Democrats have done over the last, you know, how many years. You know, I want him to win somehow. It's very hard to even say those words and be earnest about them, but I don't want it to be horrific for the American people. I have a lot of friends that live down there. I mean, I work down there a fair amount. And my friends are really scared. You know, they're scared about it. But I don't think any of us really realized how split the country was and how marginalized people felt. But it's not funny. But the ironic thing is that the folks that voted for him, they think he's the everyday man that represents them, you know, the blue-collar guy that's going to bring, you know, jobs to the iron, I don't know. He's appointing all these billionaires and these trillionaires and these, you know, massively questionable people at these high-ranking positions. it's going to be a gong show. I think it's going to be really interesting over the next few years. Thank God they're going to start campaigning again in 2.5 years.
Right.
And maybe this whole thing will be over. But, you know, what an interesting time to live, you know? What an interesting time to be alive, to see this stuff going on. I hate seeing the over-racism. I hate seeing the, you know, make America white again. And I know it's just a handful of people that are doing that. It looks terrible from here looking at it. But I'm hoping that it's just a bunch of knuckleheads that are running around being anarchists, and that it's not actually the real feeling that's, you know, part of mainstream America. Like, it's weird, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, have you met him before?
Gosh, no. And I hope to never cross his path. I think he's a product of exactly what we've been talking about, and that's social media, the power of television, the power of reality television. And somehow the United States lost focus of this is an actual real thing. This isn't a reality show.
Yeah.
This is someone that's going to run your country. And it's, I don't think they're going to settle down. I don't think the people that didn't want him, I don't think they're going to settle down. I think they're going to make it very difficult for him the next 2 or 3 years. I think they will always be protesting. I think wherever he goes is going to be a debacle. But here's a guy that doesn't even want to move into the White House. He wants to live in New York. I mean, this isn't a part-time job. This is, you know, leader of the free world, basically. And I think everyone's so gobsmacked by it. The late-night television hosts are going to have, you know, amazing comedy routines for the next 4 years, because, you know, none of the sort of the mainstream media in America really are on his side, and that's been heir apparent. I mean, even watching SNL, SNL's not going to let down
no.
the Americans as far as the comedy content at his expense as the years wear on. They're not going to let it go.
Well,
and I think that's gonna bug him so much, because he wants to be the hero.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, the election has happened now several weeks ago. We're a month or so away from inauguration, but even on social media, people are like so fired up about it, and I see them the tweets scrolling, and I think, haven't you had enough complaining about it? Like, are you just gonna do this for the next 4 years? Like, accept that it's happened,
and
and like you say, support him. You know, just let's give him a chance at first and see what happens.
Yeah, I do not want him to fail. And people think, you know, I've even had friends saying, you know, you're kind of selling out. I said, I'm not selling out at all. You know, I'm not American. I'm a Canadian. So really, to stick my nose into that system, of course what he does affects us. Of course what he does affects the entire planet. But I'm also smart enough to know, you know, grade one was the best 5 years of my life, that for me to add some kind of voice of pessimism and to have this ill will lends itself to such a dark force, and I don't want to be part of it. I don't want him to fail. I don't know how to expand on that. You know, it's hard to say, hey, I'm cheering him on. And I'm not going to go as far to say that. But I don't want him to fail. I'd like to see him do well. I'd like to see him, you know, somehow help the world to become a more peaceful place. I know that looks like an impossibility, even when there's so much contention within the United States itself. I mean, let's face it, that they've never been so split down the middle. I mean, we haven't really seen this since the 60s. But, you know, they survived that. They've survived Nixon, and they survived the Reagan years, and they survived the assassination of Kennedy, and they survived Gerald Ford, and, you know, the Bushes, you know. But this is unprecedented. This is, his personality is not what we're used to seeing. It's not polished or spit and shined. It's a guy that's kind of a loose cannon. And hopefully we will see someone who becomes more refined, who you know, gets schooled. I hope somebody, you know, takes him to task and points him in the right direction. We can only hope for the best.
Canadian Jeremy Bradley here, joined on the line by Canadian Jan Arden, talking about Christmas and, of course, naturally, American politics. You know, we were just talking about Donald Trump in the last segment, and, you know, he's so defensive, and everybody's lashing out at him, and then he's lashing out. Do you think that a big part of this is that he's getting so criticized and he hasn't even started the job yet?
I don't know. I can't imagine to get in the guy's head. They say he has very few friends. They say he's, you know, quite, you know, withdrawn and just, you know, lives in his Trump Towers. And, you know, who knows who the man really is? But I had a good friend of mine really kind of nail it. She said to me, he is shocked that he won. You know, she said, he's in shock. And I kind of thought about that because I don't think he went into the election on the 8th thinking, oh, I'm going to win. I think it blindsided him. You know, even his reluctance to move to the White House, like, I'm not moving there. Well, yeah, you kind of have to. And you kind of have to give up your businesses for 4 years because it's a conflict of interest. So, I mean, there's a lot of people saying that he's going to find himself impeached or in jail probably within the first couple of years. So we'll see how many lines he decides to cross over because he's now the most powerful human being on the planet. You know, narcissism and power are, you know, when you put those two things together, there's a lot of danger involved, and I think we're all kind of fearful because he's unpredictable. You know, even him changing his mind about going after Hillary Clinton, he goes back and forth just like a pendulum. So you never, even he can say one thing but completely change his mind the next day. And he strikes out in very vicious ways with people. We've seen that behavior over the last year of, you know, just the verbal assaults on people. And, you know, they've elected a guy that, you know, even though he assaulted women and even he made fun of disabled people and he, you know, was going after, you know, every ethnicity in the world that wasn't somehow angled with Saxon New Jersey. It was weird to watch that it became kind of this mainstream acceptable behavior. So, yeah, it's scary. It's scary to watch. It's unavoidable to talk about politics now. Christmas is going to be a very trying time for many families, you know, in North America, period, because, you know, families have been split down the middle, too. Mm-hmm. You know, you have two brothers that vote this way and two sisters that vote that way, and the parents have, they've gone, one's gone Democrat and the other one's gone Republican. So can you imagine the conversations that are going to be going around the Christmas dinner table? I think there's going to be more fights this year than there ever has been before, but I think it's going to be not a peaceful time in America. You're right. I don't think it's ever going to settle down. And they have to figure out some way of being unified through this because it is what it is. He's going to be the president. He's going to be sworn in January, and that's just the way it's going to be. There's no recount in the world that's going to change the result.
I don't know, really, I don't. But let's swing this around and end on a happier note. Talking about Christmas,
yeah.
Favorite Christmas song of all time?
Gosh, I'm going to have to go with the Christmas song, which is Chestnuts Roasting
right.
on an Open Fire. But my other favorite, and it's not a super popular one, it's getting more so, but I think it's called Mary, Did You Know?
Right.
And it's just that beautiful song, Mary, did you know that your baby boy, da-da-da-da-da-da. Winona Judd sings the most beautiful version of that song that I've ever heard. But I love Christmas music. I love all of it. I love the Streisand Christmas record. The Carpenters Christmas record is one of the best ones ever made. It is played ad nauseum every year across the planet. Karen would be laughing to know how much the Carpenters music was still being played on planet Earth. It's so nice. study. Like, that Christmas record, every single song is just a winner. And you know what? You can hear Karen singing in between, whether it's Mariah or, you know, Britney or Christina Aguilera. Karen Carpenter's voice comes in, and she steals the show. Because it's just, you cannot touch her. And that's just the way I feel about it. She comes on the radio with something that was recorded in 1977, and it blows everybody out of the water.
Well, that's, we were talking music legends, right? Favorite Christmas movie of all time?
Elf.
Really?
I love Elf, but I'm also a sucker for The Polar Express.
Okay.
I love The Grinch That Stole Christmas with Carrie.
Right.
I mean, there's some great, and I mean, there's just so many great Christmas movies out there. But Elf, I'm gonna have to say Elf. It's my all-time favorite Christmas movie.
Yeah. What about, like, the classic cartoons, Charlie Brown, like, any of those?
I love all of them.
Yeah.
I love the claymation stuff, all that crazy claymation stuff. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Burl Ives singing all those great songs. I mean, it's a great time of year. It's just, it's kind of a dreamy kind of year, and I think this year more than ever, it's just so important for people. I mean, in my home province of Alberta, people are still really struggling to get on their feet with the oil industry being, you know, in such disarray. And it's really, you know, people that haven't been unemployed in their life, you know, that are 55, 60 years old are finding themselves really struggling. So, you know, I really, my hopes for Christmas this year is that people really have a chance to, you know, have some happy times and have some great time spent with family and friends, and really remind ourselves of what's important, and, you know, having our health, and, you know, having a roof over our heads, and you know, so I think this, it, I mean, it, with all the Trump stuff and the stuff going on in the world, the unrest and the frickin' war in Syria that has been going on 5 years, way too long. I think it's important that there is some happy times and something to look forward to, and, you know, lots of food and shortbread and turkey and, you know, great music.
I was going to say, maybe a little escapism for a couple hours at Jan Arden Christmas,
yes,
right?
You bet. That's
well,
what it's all about.
I know. I think that you're actually going to be late for your concert, so we should wrap. And I don't even know if you called us collect, so we should wrap this up quickly, Jan. I want to thank you.
Thanks a lot for not being here, you know.
Well, have a great time in Winnipeg. Enjoy the snow, and thanks for spreading the holiday cheer in the city while I'm gone.
Thank you.
All right, Merry Christmas, Jan.
Merry Christmas.